it's Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Let's tune it up on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. It is One Bills Live here with you until 3 as we turn the page on the hapless New York Jets and look ahead to what could be a formidable and physical matchup with the surging Indianapolis Colts, winners of 4 straight coming into Buffalo this week, and undoubtedly have not forgotten about their 3-point loss in the wild card round of the playoffs last season. Perhaps one of the most interesting notes, Steve, the Indianapolis defense has been almost as opportunistic in taking the football away as Buffalo's defense. The Bills lead the league at a plus 14 turnover margin. They have 24 total takeaways on the season. The Colts are a plus 11 and have 21 total takeaways. So pretty impressive. As good an all-around team as you're probably going to find, offense, defense, special teams, although their kicking game probably lacks in a little bit. Blankenship's been hurt. He's been a little inconsistent. But their defense is pretty good front to back. Offensive line we've talked about already. So we'll be diving into that headlong in the coming days here, as you might expect. But I think this is an interesting test since the call came from Coach McDermott last week, Steve, to be a more physical football team, because you're going to have to be if you want to beat this team this week.
That's right, and they're good. I mean, they're playing really good football. And we saw them last year, and you and I both agree, that Colt game last year in the playoffs was as hard a game as you're going to come out and win. It was a dogfight. They did it in the Bills building in Highmark Stadium, and they came in the Bills were in control, but the Colts gave them all they could handle. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Also, we were talking as well, they come in with this offensive line and how physical they are. Starlo Tulele is still out of the lineup. Your biggest defensive lineman.
Still on the COVID list.
Your best defensive tackle is still on the COVID list. You need all the big bodies and the great players you can muster in a game like this, because the Bills really do need to string together wins in order to stay in the hunt for all their hopes and dreams.
And stay ahead of New England, who remains a half game back and is another team that is surging right now. I believe they've won 4 in a row as well. So
yes.
you gotta just keep on keeping on. Just keep stacking wins. Keep stacking wins. As Steve mentioned, Star Latulele remains on the reserve COVID list. Obviously missed last Sunday's game against the Jets. Head coach Sean McDermott was asked about Latulele's status going forward, and he said, "All I know is he remains on the reserve COVID list." So we'll have to see. I guess we will find out in short order through the course of this week, based on his return, as to whether or not he is vaccinated. Mitchell Trubisky just came back off the COVID reserve list yesterday, and he had been on for more than a week, which would indicate unvaccinated player, because it's an automatic 10 days when that happens. So we'll see what course it takes with Star Latulele going forward here. But if he is unvaccinated, then he's probably missing this week's game as well, because he will not be out from under the 10-day window. He just won't. So if that's the case, he's missing another game. So we don't know his exact status. And coach didn't really care to share it, I think, because it's health-related, it's personal, all that stuff. So I think he was just trying to respect Star's privacy with that. But we'll know by the end of the week what the situation is. Tremaine Edmonds listed as day-to-day by Coach McDermott in his press conference yesterday afternoon with the media, still trying to recover from the hamstring injury, so the severity of that injury is not known, but day-to-day is an encouraging designation. It's certainly better than week-to-week. So I think there's a chance that Edmonds is back in the lineup, and he would be a welcome addition back to the defense in light of the run game they're going to be facing this week in the form of Jonathan Taylor in that O-line.
Yeah, Jonathan Taylor is a, is a stud. I mean, he's 237 pounds, and he can outrun everybody on the field. He's a load. He's every bit the back that Derrick Henry is. They use him differently than Derrick Henry, and his skill set is a little bit different. I think he's more versatile than Derrick Henry, but he's that kind of guy. Really fast, really good offensive line, and they give him a lot of opportunities. Now, he's nowhere in the near neighborhood of where Derrick Henry was when, you know, the Titans were using Derrick Henry. Still the same kind of guy, though, and you're going to get a belly full of him, and you got to bear up on it. And I think that his presence on that offense is every bit as important as Derrick Henry's was to the Titans. And that is the crux to this game, in my opinion.
Speaking of running the football, the 49ers decided to do that last night to the tune of 44 rushes to 19 passes. It looked like the 49ers of 2 years ago in the playoffs when they seemed to be afraid to let Garoppolo throw the football. They didn't have a great yards per carry average. It was only 3.5 yards per carry, but it was more than enough to dictate how that game was played. And when it all comes out in the wash, they win handily, 31-10, handing the Rams their second straight loss. Rams are now 7-3 on the season. And Matthew Stafford had another couple of poor turnovers and cost his team. They just lost Robert Woods, tried to insert Odell Beckham Jr. into the lineup. And it's pretty clear that he's not fully comfortable within the scope of their offense. And it's another loss for them.
Yeah, 7-3.
Going into the bye.
49ers go to 4-5 on the season, certainly not out of it, although the NFC is in a little bit different of a landscape than the AFC. They're a little bit more top-heavy than the AFC is. But, you know, they only ran – I mean, you think of it, they ran for 156 yards, and that's like, okay, it's a good day, but it's not like a
– not on 44 carries.
Right. It's not that much, but man, oh, man.
Did not dissuade them.
And they got some free possessions from the Rams early on, and that set them up.
People points.
Yeah.
Jimmy Ward, 27-yard interception return for a touchdown. And that was, and I mean, to me, the Jimmy Ward interception return for a touchdown, Steve, that was the backbreaker because the Niners offense comes out, goes 18 plays, 93 yards, puts 7 on the board. You come out and you throw a pick 6.
Yeah. Well, it sounds bad to pick 6, but it was right in the hands of Tyler Higbee. I mean, he had it, and he bumped it up, and he doinked it right to the guy's hands, 27 yards. And the guy could have backpedaled in, and Matt Stafford's sitting there going, I just threw a pick 6 to my best tight end who gave it to the other team.
Yeah.
And then all night as well, something was up with the Rams. They had like 19,000 drops. I mean, they were dropping the ball. Everybody was dropping the ball.
Which made their lack of interest in running the football all the more interesting. If you had guys that can't catch the ball, all right, there's fog, it's damp there in San Fran, as you usually get. They ran it 10 times. 9 times, really, because Stafford had a scramble for a yard.
Yeah.
I know Rams you were down on the game, but, Steve, it's the second quarter.
Yeah, I'll say this. The Rams are not in deep trouble. I don't think. They're not in deep trouble. They're a good football team. They're going to play well. If they would have caught the balls that Stafford put right in the breadbasket of his receivers, if they had caught those, might have been a closer game. I'm not saying they would have won it, but they would have scored more than 10 points. And the Rams would not have scored 31. They would only gotten 24 because you take that pick 6 off, but it was right in the hands of the receiver. And he completely muffed it and gave it to the – I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like the worst possible luck you can have as a quarterback. And it happened to the Rams, Matt Stafford. So you could put them back to 24 points maybe. Yeah, it would have been a much different game. If they wouldn't have dropped the footballs that Stafford was throwing and they don't give him the pick 6, it's unbelievable how bad that
– They were 3 of 10 on third down. They were 1 for 4 in the red zone, 0 for 2 in goal-to-go situations. And they only held on to the ball for 21 minutes.
They never had the football. And that goes back to, you know, the analytics of it. And you get these, you know, you pull those games apart numbers-wise and you start to make conclusions about you know, if you want to move the ball and if you want to score points, you got to throw it. But there's a difference between scoring points and moving the ball up and down the field and controlling the game. And you can control the game if you can make first downs with the running game, and you don't put the ball at risk as much as you do throwing it. And you don't ever have the horrific play that we just described in the pick six. So these analytics guys get in there and they say, no, the good teams throw it all over the yard and they do nothing. You know, the plays, the averages are all that, da, 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 da. But when something goes bad, and heaven forbid two or three things go bad, which it happens, you get blown out by a team whose quarterback at his best day is a game manager.
Yeah. This is how the possessions went for the Rams last night. This is how they ended. First possession, INT. That went back the other way, 18 plays, 93 yards for a touchdown. Second possession, INT returned for a touchdown. Third possession, touchdown, turnover on downs, punt, 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 turnover on downs, field goal, end of game. Thanks for coming. It was a matchup that, you know, but those division games, man, they'll always get you.
Think about it. They got it. They got a touch on the 49ers. 11 minutes off the interception, 88 yards, touchdown. Almost 8 minutes after the kickoff, touchdown. 11 plays. So they had like 29 plays on two drives. And then they had one kneel down before halftime. They had technically three possessions. It was only two possessions in the first half. Two. That's, you want to talk about controlling a game. That's it. I mean, no, they didn't score a ton of points. I get it. But man, oh man, they controlled that game. And you watch it, and as dangerous as you think that L.A. is, and they are, Matt Stafford can sling it. And they got, you know, all these the weapons. They got Cooper Kupp and the rest. They could not get control of that game.
Could not.
Could
well, they
not.
Couldn't convert.
Aaron Donald, non-factor. Von Miller, non-factor.
OBJ, non-factor.
Jalen Ramsey, non-factor.
And then Jalen Ramsey was getting a little ornery on the sidelines with one of the coaches. Things aren't going their way.
Okay. Well, you know. You buy those shiny toys, they're all sometimes they're a little fragile.
Twitter conversation for you today is as follows. Inside the building here at One Bills Drive, what is the biggest challenge for the Bills for the remainder of the season? We'll leave the answers open to you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We'll also take your answers on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live, so be sure to file them there if you don't have time to give us a call. And we will go to the phones right now at 803-0550. And waiting for us there is Jeff in Buffalo. Jeff, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live. Jeff, are you there?
Stop listening to the radio,
Jeff. He's listening
Jeff.
To the radio. Yeah, well, Jeff!
Yeah. Hey.
What are you doing?
how you doing?
Good. What do you got for us?
Okay, I have a question about A.J. Klein.
Sure.
I've been watching him ever since he came to the team, and the first few games that he had were not spectacular last year. But, you know, ever since then, he has been playing lights out. I mean, he's all over the field. And he's either, you know, making tackles on his own or finishing off tackles that somebody else gets to initially. But he's just all over the place. And I'm wondering, you know, especially with a guy like Taylor on the Colts, if Edmonds is healthy, why, you know, they can't go to three linebackers and you know, have Klein, Milano, and Edmonds on the field if Edmonds can play.
Right.
I'm assuming.
Yeah,
that
I understand.
Hamstring is going to be okay. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand.
If all three of them are on the field at the same time, I think that would be a good, you know, remedy for Taylor.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it's interesting.
You're right.
It's interesting you asked that, Jeff. And thanks for the call. Go ahead, Steve.
You're right. It would. You would be inviting the Colts to throw the football on you. And you would also be inviting them to go to, you know, three wide receiver sets, which I don't know how often they do that, but they're going to try and counter that. Now, if you go heavy like that and you get three linebackers on the field with, you know, you got seven big guys on the field in your front seven, you're asking them to throw the football. Maybe that comes down to your pass rush and all that, and it might be a good way to go. Maybe that's part of the game plan. It makes some sense. Put the hand, take the game out of Taylor's hands and put it in the hands of Carson Wentz. That's what you're asking for.
Problem is, most teams in this league, the most popular personnel grouping is 11 personnel. One back, one tight end, three wides. And if you have base personnel on the field, which is usually three linebackers in a 4-3 system, you are vulnerable to getting beaten in the passing game. And this is a subject that Leslie Frazier addressed in his press conference yesterday. And what he said was, we have remained in nickel personnel from start to finish in every single game we played this season, except the Tennessee game. So I suppose it is a possibility, knowing the Colts can run the ball with similar effectiveness, that they might play a little bit of base personnel with three linebackers, three true linebackers, but they think so much of Taron Johnson as a nickel corner and his ability to play the run like a linebacker in run support that there are advantages to leaving that personnel package on the field. Like when the other team goes tempo and all of a sudden they throw four wides out there, you're in nickel, you can bring Hyde down to cover the fourth wide out, you got Taron on the field already, you're okay. You're not caught subbing people on and off. They stay in nickel almost exclusively start to finish in most games. So here is Coach Frazier addressing the effectiveness of Taron Johnson and why he is on the field almost every snap of the game.
It's more personnel driven. If we didn't have a guy like Taron, I don't know if we could do it. He just allows us to not feel that we can't stop the run in our nickel packages, because usually when people know you have five defensive backs on the field, they want to attack you in the run game and feel like they can get you out of it. And because of Taron's ability to be able to be a good cover guy, but also be stout in the run game, fit those runs up like a linebacker, it's allowed us to play the way we have. And we really begun to do this came about the second half of last season. I think that's when we kind of transitioned to this mode. Once we got a healthy Taron, because he'd been struggling with some injuries, and he started getting a flow, and we kind of found our identity as a defense as well.
So, I mean, he basically said on the press conference yesterday, we've been in nickel start to finish in every game except the Tennessee game. They've played nine.
Right.
And they were 91% nickel personnel last year for the season, and that's only after they switched exclusively to nickel start to finish in almost every game of the second half of the season. So that number is probably going to go up, provided Taron Johnson stays healthy. But I thought that was a very telling comment by Coach Frazier as to how much confidence they have, not only in Taron, but to stay in nickel and believe they can stop the run. And this team's third in the league in run defense. It's worked.
That's what it boils down to, because it's just like I said, like we've been talking about. If you put an extra linebacker on the field and take a defensive back off, it invites the offense to run, to throw the football.
Yeah.
You get a big guy like A.J. Klein matched up on a back or a wideout or a slot receiver or a tight end, and you feel like you've got an edge there offensively. If you take him off and put Taron Johnson on, now the matchup goes in favor of the defense. They can match up with any of the wideouts or the running backs you might have put on the field, but you feel like you can out-physical them. That's the tipping point. Six big guys or seven big guys up front, or six big guys and one guy who's a cover guy who also has that skill set of being a nasty little tackler. If you got that guy, then you say, all right, run it on us when we're in nickel. And Leslie Frazier just alluded to that whole thing. That's what it boils down to. It's a numbers game. There's 11 guys on each side, and they can decipher the matchups they want. Now, and it gets down to the – and it's complicated, let's face it. Because once you go out there and you've got Levi, Tre'Davious, and Taron with Poyer and Hyde back there, and you've got your guys in Indianapolis that you're going to match up with them, where is it you think one of your guys, maybe your best guy, can be put to get on the guy you think you can win against? For most teams, you know, we all look at Levi. You know, maybe Levi's a four-year starter. He's not. He's a.
And
he's
his numbers have been really good this year.
Right. So you're looking at that, and so you got to feel like the Bills feel like if they're going to throw the football, we got them. Particularly with if our offensive line, or I mean our defensive line, can get a pass rush. Now against this offensive line, it might be rough. But that's where the balance of this game is going to fall, and it's where it falls every week. Can the Colts in the passing game dictate a one-on-one matchup in man coverage against the Bills with their guy on our guy and win, yeah, and then protect it up?
And not many have been able to do it. Number three against the run, number two against the pass,
number one in yards given up,
one in points allowed. So
they're hard. It's hard. It's hard. They're good. I mean,
and staying in the same personnel group all game.
Right.
That's
there are no
impressive
surprises. They're not surprising anybody with their personnel grouping.
Pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive. And, you know, the Colts are going to know what they're up against, and they're going to have a really good plan. But the Colts are better than a lot of teams in some of the things they do.
They are. They are.
So you got to – now the Bills got to deal with that.
I'm telling you, that Thursday night game against the Jets 2 weeks ago, not that, you know, the Jets are a juggernaut defensively, but they've got some big dudes up front there. They're putting people on roller skates.
Yeah,
in the run game. I mean, yeah, roller skates.
And they've got that. And Frank Reich, their head coach and their offensive coordinator, they've got that scheme going where, you know, they'll do that wide zone read with, you know, with Taylor, and they'll also punch him up inside with a trap or a wham block or something like that. So, they've got the full, yeah, range of philosophies they can go to with handing it off with Carson Wentz. And he goes under center a lot, too. So it can be a problem.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Lewis on a cell. Lewis, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing, Chris? Chris, this question is for Steve. Steve, from one big-time athlete to another, how do you feel about, you know, with us having our starters in, being up 38-3, still throwing deep passes last week and doing the same thing in the Miami game, kind of, still playing when we're up by 20-something in the end of the fourth quarter. You being a professional athlete, do you feel like, would that bother you seeing that? I mean, I don't care. If someone's up by 50 points, you should stop them from being up by 50 points. That's your job to stop them. But putting our players more at risk of being hurt and doing plays like that at 38-3 in the fourth quarter, wouldn't that aggravate, like, wouldn't that put more of a target on their back, let alone just them getting a fluke injury? I mean, you want to try to prevent them as much as they could from being hurt.
Not always. So, I know what you mean, Lewis. Is the risk worth the reward? Here's the thing. It is a reward. When you get up on a team, when you play and you play well and you get up on a team and you can play with a lead and you can do what you want to do and you coach, that's a reward for the sacrifice and the hurt. That's a reward for guys like Josh Allen, Devin Singletary, the offensive lineman. It's a reward for them to be able to go out there and play like that in a situation like that where they're doing that. It's a reward for them. That's what you do it for. Those are the moments that you play for. When you're playing and you're winning, everything's going your way, that you pull them out of that. It's like promising a kid a birthday party and then not throwing it. You know, you prepare for it, you decorate the house for a party, you do all of that stuff, and then it's like, you know what, we decided not to. Or tell him he can't come to the party. That's, you know, that's a reward that this coaching staff has always done. They did it last year in week 17 against the Dolphins. They did it against the Denver Broncos. It's a reward to let your players go out there. And if you're on the other side of that, and I've been, if you're on the other side of that, you're doing some things desperate. Once in a while, you'll do some things desperate to try and get them off the field. You'll send more pressure. You'll do more things. You'll take some risks trying to stem the tide. And when you do things like this, like that, it forces the team that's already ahead to adjust. You're not going to just kneel down. They're not going to kneel down. They're going to keep playing. And that on days like that, when they say, well, okay, if you're going to send an eight-man rush scheme, we're getting it out, the ball out of here. We're not getting our quarterback get hit. So you send a ball, you throw it out, and all of a sudden you snap off an 80-yard touchdown because there's nobody back there. That kind of stuff happens. And as a player, you understand that. You know, you run the adjustments, you take your risks, and after the game's over, it's whatever. What are you going to do? You may remember it when you prepare to play him next. You say, listen, we're not going to let that happen again.
Yeah.
That it'll be highly motivating for them to come out and play better next time. I mentioned that a little bit in Bills Tonight after the game. You may get a little bit of retribution in the next game, and I don't mean dirty hits or anything like that, but an attitude from the Jets next time because of the way this game went. But, you know, you understand, as a pro, it's like, it's up to me to stop him. Ain't nobody, yeah. You know, you got to take it like a grown man because you made your bed.
And to your point about the Week 17 game last year and how Coach McDermott handled that, pretty much having all the starters in through the first half in a game that did not represent any opportunity for them to advance their standing in the playoff seedings, I wouldn't be surprised in a game like this that we had last Sunday if Coach is trying also secondarily, it's not a primary objective, but secondarily saying, I don't want to give anybody on this roster, on this sideline, the thought that it's okay to take their foot off the gas right now.
Right.
I think there's a part of that with him.
Because that can
be a slippery slope.
Finishing games is something you got to learn.
And he addressed that when there were a couple of fumbles at the end of the game.
He
was not happy with that.
You start to ease up and you start to take what's there. You know, you say, okay, that's good enough on that play. All of that stuff going on. You're in a, you know, one-on-one confrontation. You just don't want to deal with the intensity anymore, you know, the pressure and the confrontation. And guys will start to just, you know, go through the motions. They'll start to take the edge off their game. They're not as aggressive. They're not as, you know, they don't have that nasty attitude where they're competing hard. They start to just try to survive. And that's a fine line, but it's a line that is very evident when you start seeing the ball coughed up and you see see the other team for the first time in the game start to have, you know, snap off 7-yard plays, a 12-yard pass play, a 15-yard pass play, another nice little 8-yard gain. It's because the team that's in such a lead is just trying to survive and get out of there. That's the only difference, and that's a tangible thing that the coaching staff wants to fight against. You want those guys on the field to know that when they're on the field, they got to finish it up, and they got to finish it up with an attitude. So, I see the point about, you know, injury risk, about stirring a pot or insulting your opponent. But even in that situation, that's about a coach has got to think it's about his team, getting them ready for the next week and sending them a message rather than worrying about the feelings of the other team.
Which goes back to convincing your players that what we have to focus on is what we do before we even worry about what the opponent does.
Right.
Let's go back to the phones to Tom on the west side. Tom, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. You know, I feel like teams don't really want to try to throw against us because we're so good at defending it. And the teams that would qualify for that would be like the Tampa Bays, maybe the L.A. Rams if they had a healthy Robert Woods. And KC, but we already took care of KC. And I got a feeling we're going to see them again in the playoffs. But I think teams are trying to run against us because that's always been our weakness. And Derrick Henry decimated us. So right there is the blueprint. They got Jonathan Taylor.
Yep.
And I feel like it's going to be another strong run game against us this week. What say you?
Yeah, I agree 100%. As I was saying at the top of the show, physical opponents, teams that can play a physical brand of football, have proven to be problems for the Bills. Steelers had a physical defensive front. Bills offense had problems. You go to the Tennessee game, physical team on offense, defense had trouble stopping them. Jaguars decided to play a physical style of football 2 weeks ago. And it worked for them, chiefly on the defensive side of the ball. Now here we go again with an Indianapolis offense that can mash with the best of them. So it's test number 4. And if you lose another game to a team that can prove a physical approach is the best way to beat you, you're going to have problems come the playoffs because you're going to run into one of these kinds of teams. And if you can't measure up physically, your season's going to be over before you want it to be.
Yeah. And here's this thing, too. I mean, you can give – they're going to have some success. They're too good a team not to. Every team in the league will have some success on any given down. The problem is, do your strengths outstrong their strengths? Can Josh Allen and the offense score more points at a faster clip than the running game of the Indianapolis Colts? Can he get them off the field enough times to give you enough possessions to score enough points? We've seen what happens when this team plays complementary football. They hang 45 points on the Jets. If you're both sides of the football are having some success, particularly when you get five turnovers, yeah, you're hard to beat. And that's what this team still needs to think about. Yeah, I mean, this team has proven in the past, like last year, for instance, and maybe a little bit this year. I have to go back and think about it. But, yeah, in the Dolphins game, 35-0 early on, the Houston Texans 40-0. The Washington football team came back and climbed back into it at 21-14 with a couple of turnovers by the Bills. So this team has proven they can win with offense and they can win with defense, either way you want to slice it. But when they play together – They're going to win every weekend. The question is what they put out on the field on Sunday going to be enough to beat what the Colts bring? And I think the best way to do it is to make sure your offense has a plan that it can stay on the field and you don't turn it over, and the defense has got a way to take away something that they do really, really well. And in this case, it might be, particularly with our secondary, stack the box. Dare him to throw it against Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, and Taron Johnson, and yeah. Levi Wallace. Let's see it. They all had an interception last week. Let's see if Carson Wentz, with the weapons they have, can carve up our secondary because they're not going to run the football.
Break time for us here. You already heard from defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier. We're going to have some comments from head coach Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll as well. That's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Three by one receiver set. Back to throw goes White. Deep drop. Fires long over the middle. Down to the Bills 40. And it's complete. The receiver then is tossed at the ground at the 30 and fumbles the football. And it looks like Buffalo has recovered.
That was a huge play. I mean, I feel like that really swayed the game and really put us in a position to run away with it. So, I mean, I feel like that was the biggest play of the game.
One of those plays we preach all the time. Whenever you're around the football, obviously, you know, you're making the tackle, but you always go after the football. And so, you know, that's what I tried to do and was, you know, able to get it out. You know, we like I said, we practice that a lot.
That is the Crunch Time Play of the Game presented by Frito-Lay, an official sponsor of the Buffalo Bills. Big takeaway, 1 of 5 for the Bills in the game on Sunday. And the only one of the fumble recovery variety. Everything else was an interception. But certainly instrumental in keeping points off the board for the Jets at the end of the first half. And the Bills wind up, you know, with the first possession of the second half going down the field, and then the game became a runaway after that.
Yeah, they got that catch to Diggs, the one that they repeated the play right away. They got up 17-0. Jets couldn't do anything with their possession. Bills knelt down to end the half. They come back out, get the kickoff, and then 23-0, and 23-3. And like I said the other day, the Jets are standing on their sidelines. The Bills go up 24-3. They got to be looking at themselves and Mike White going, okay, so we got Mike White, who's got to bring us back and score more than 3 touchdowns to win this game. We got to shut those guys down. They got to do it against the number one defense in the league. You know what? Let's just go home. I mean, that's kind of where they're at. That was a big ask at that point, and that was like I said, 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. They got a whole half to play virtually, and they're in an insurmountable spot. You knew that game was going to go no place but downhill for the Jets from that point. They went into survivor mode that we were talking about.
They did indeed. We wanted to pass along to you some comments from head coach Sean McDermott, Brian Daboll, Leslie Frazier as the coordinators and the head coach, addressed the media the Monday after games, long after we're off the air. And we begin with Coach McDermott. Yesterday on the show, Steve, myself, a lot of you callers told us that Gabe Davis deserves more playing time. Here is Coach McDermott on the what would we call this? Where his game is at, the status of Gabe Davis's game within the scope of the offense this season.
He made plays when he's had the opportunities. There's no doubt about that. And I just was, you know, he's a really good young player, and we're fortunate to have him, and really impressed by the way he embraced his role this past week. I mean, you watch what he did on special teams and the role he played there. You watch what he did blocking and the role he played there. And then you watch what he did when, I mean, everyone sees the plays he made down the field, like you're talking about, Jay, but that's earned, right? That's earned when you are in a role that he's in. It's dominate and master your role, and then whatever comes after that is gravy. And he stayed on the attack through that and made some big time plays for us, for sure.
I think Coach aptly points out, yes, he does stretch the field, but I'm telling you, I said it yesterday, he's the best run blocking receiver on the team.
Yeah.
And what have they been trying to get going again? The run game with some measure of effectiveness. You have him on the field, I think your chances are better, especially if you're running to the wide areas.
Yeah, Gabe strikes. He's a really, really intelligent football player. That's why he finds those gaps. That's why he uses the subtlety of route running to get open. He's a fast guy, but he's, you know, NFL, he's just fast. He's not really fast. You know what I'm saying? And he's so intelligent. He's such an intelligent route runner. He's a tough, gritty guy, so he catches the ball in traffic. He hangs in there tough, and he is a very willing blocker. That's why he's out there, and it's amazing too. And that's, we knew it coming into the season. They got all these guys, and there's just not going to be enough room for all of them to be on the field at the same time. And there's not going to be enough footballs to go around. Gabe Davis right now is the last guy on that list. He's the first guy in out of the front three, on those situations when they're throwing it. And other times it's Isaiah McKenzie. So he's sharing time and comes in, yeah, like you say, to block in the run game, that kind of thing. And it's just a crowded room full of a lot of really quality players. And, you know, thankfully Gabe Davis is a patient enough and pro enough not to make a stink about it.
Well, and I think the reason that he did get more playing time, it was partly due to game plan, I would believe, but I think it also had to do with what Brian Daboll admitted yesterday on the conference call, where he basically confirmed that they had Cole Beasley on a pitch count in
right.
Sunday's game due to his rib injury that he's still trying to recover fully from. He was, you know, still less than comfortable, shall we say, to put it a certain way, from his ribs, bruised ribs. So they said, hey, look, let's just put him on a pitch count and rotate some other guys in, like Isaiah McKenzie, as Steve mentioned, and Gabriel Davis. So they did get a few more snaps on the offensive side of the ball as a result, especially knowing Jay Kumerow wasn't even an option since he was on the reserve COVID list. So, but yeah, to his credit, he took advantage of those opportunities when they came down the pike. We also wanted to get you a couple of comments from offensive coordinator Brian Daboll. And obviously coming off of what was the most productive yardage day in Stephon Diggs' time with the Bills in a single game, 162 yards on 8 receptions, Coach Daboll was naturally asked about the value of Stephon Diggs to the offense. It sounds like an obvious question, but here is Coach Dable's answer.
Yeah, well, he's involved pretty much every play where it might not be getting the ball. Look, we'd love to give him the ball as many times as we can, but again, I've talked about that. But he's involved in a lot of things. Again, whether he has it or he doesn't have it, you know, whether it's helping other people get open based on a rotation of a safety or helping in the running game if they're going to play too high on him. You know, he's a really good football player. More importantly, he's a really good person. And glad we have him.
So the point that Coach Daboll was trying to make there, because they were saying, why was Diggs so involved in the offense this week, but he hasn't been more involved in previous weeks? And he's trying to say, hey, look, we call a lot of plays for him, but the coverage sometimes dictates that Josh has to go somewhere else with the football. And they've moved him around. They've tried to find different ways to make better use of him, especially early in games. It just finally worked this past week, I think, more than anything, right?
And a lot of people have said, oh, my gosh, where's Steph Diggs? He's not that far from his numbers a year ago.
You looked it up. He was like, what, a target a game down?
He's less than a catch away from where he was last year.
Yeah.
So you say he's disappeared. He ain't disappeared. He's still a top guy on the team and one of the top guys in the conference. So, yeah, he's not he's not that far away from where he was a year ago. So teams have always tried to take him away, but it's hard to do. And I think some of the reasons this year that it's a little less also have to do with the scheme that teams are running against the Bills, not what they're doing in the secondary, but what they're doing up front. They're sending a lot of pressure after Josh. Teams know Josh is good enough now. If he doesn't have pressure on him, you lose the play. That's all there is to it. If he doesn't feel pressure, you're losing on that play. And teams have responded to that and hoped that the pressure would get there before the secondary broke down. And they've had some success doing it. The Dolphins had some success doing it early in the first half of that game. And Jacksonville had some success with the pressure they put. So, you know, that's out there. And you can bet that when we start playing these teams, maybe this week against the Indianapolis Colts, certainly I'll bet you're going to see it against the Patriots. Yeah. You're going to see teams trying to pressure Josh because when he's under pressure, everything falls apart if he can't get rid of the football. So that's a little bit of what's happening with Steph Diggs, I think, as a symptom of what they're doing against Josh.
Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll get to a couple more comments from Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier and let you know just what the coordinators are thinking, not only about the run game on offense, but about this Colts offense and stopping them with their stud back, Jonathan Taylor. We'll get to all of that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Reed's Gens, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills, presents Reed's Milestones. The Bills, plus 145 point differential this season, is tied with the 1964 Bills for the best mark through 9 games in team history. The next closest team, Steve, is the Arizona Cardinals and the New England Patriots. Both of them are plus 98, but the Bills almost 50 points ahead of those two teams. Kind of a cool milestone note to put up there.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Reed's Gens.
That stat I pulled out, the Bills are hard to beat, and you don't get down on them because it's hard to come back. It's both sides of the football that are playing really, really well. And, of course, the offense took a week off in Jacksonville and took a half off against Miami, so everybody was like, oh, my God. But, I mean, and I don't know what it is. It's becoming the thing around the NFL. Every team in the league that pokes its head up and say, hey, we might be making a run at this, all of a sudden gets kneecapped during the season.
Yeah.
The Rams lost two straight. The Cincinnati Bengals were number one seed for a hot minute. now they're not just this just in. The Cleveland Browns have disappeared. You know, now you've got teams like, you know, now the Patriots are coming on, the Colts are coming on. You know, the Bills have kind of been steady there. They took three halves off 2 weeks ago. Now they're back in the saddle. You got other teams like it. Tennessee.
The Rams have lost two in a row.
And think about this. Tennessee is a team that they could have been in that conversation, but they've won the last two games with smoke and mirrors, and they got it done. They kept on trucking.
It's their defense that's carried in the last
couple
of weeks.
That's right. There's that. So it's been a league where there have been really cool highs and some really embarrassing lows for a lot of teams, and Bills among them. Bills among them.
100%. Brian Daboll was asked about the effectiveness of Buffalo's run game. It was certainly on display against the Jets at MetLife Stadium Sunday. So Coach Daboll was asked about what is the level of importance to have it look like that every single week.
Again, each week, not to sound like a broken record, but it's such a one-week league that we deal with. every single week. And we're always going to try to do what we think we need to do to win that game. And you hope it works every time. Sometimes it doesn't. But I think the main thing is you're consistent with your approach. You come back in, you fix the things you need to fix, and you move on to the next week, win, lose, or draw. But in terms of, you know, let's run it 40 times and run two back power, or let's do this. I mean, that's just not how our philosophy works here. And I can just speak on that.
And Dable's plans begin with matchups. That's where it all starts when they're crafting game plans. And obviously with different opponents every week, those matchups are going to be different, and it's going to dictate that you turn to different things in your offensive arsenal to be effective.
Yeah, it sounds simple, but man, oh man, there's a lot in it. You go watch these teams play, and you think, why was this team successful against them in this area, and why was that team successful against them in that area, and why can't anybody do this against them? And then you kind of superimpose that on your own personnel. Can our people do what those guys did against them that was successful? And what have, like in this case, what have the Colts done to keep people from doing that to them again? Is it enough, or does it play into our hands of another part of our offense? You just kind of, you fit the puzzle pieces together, both schematically and personnel-wise, and then you have to figure out ways to get out. You break the huddle and you say, okay, show them this offensively, personnel and formation, and then move to this, and we think they're going to be in this, and if they get into that, we're going to do this, right? Well, there's only about 9 million things that can get in the way of all that, right? So that's what you're juggling, and that's the way you put in a game plan. Brian Daboll has done a masterful job since day one, and I know the people have there. We've gone through, you know, in losses in 2018 when Josh's rookie year and in his sophomore year where people were just absolutely, their heads were exploding because they couldn't fathom why Brian Daboll was still the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. You're out there, you know it. You're out there. There are people out there. They were absolutely calling for his head on a silver platter because he did not know what he was doing. Well, he did. And, you know, now he's got a quarterback that has grown enough that can execute that stuff and make the right decisions, and he's got enough players around him that can get it done. He was working with a half a deck of cards two or three years ago.
Yeah. Makes it harder, especially in this league.
Right.
We have to take a break. When we come back, it is time for the weekly appearance from Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt, who had an interesting prediction on Sunday's Bills-Jets game. He would have been close if the game was only 40 minutes long. Unfortunately, it's a 60-minute contest, so his score prediction didn't quite hit the mark. But we'll talk to him about that. Plenty more about the AFC and the landscape of the league coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are, hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and hour number two on a Tuesday means only one thing. We're joined by one Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt to break down the Bills, the landscape of the NFL, and all parts in between. You like those horns, huh, Kyle? I like the horns, too. I'm a sucker for horns.
It's a deep, robust brass section. It got my head bobbing. Yeah. And then I had the indignation of Brownie about at Tasker about a blimp, a balloon, whatever it is. I love the intro of the show.
Yeah, it's there's a long story behind that, and we don't need to get into it now. Kyle, 37-3, I believe, was your prediction, which would have been dead on the money if the game only lasted 40 minutes, but there was another 20 to be played, unfortunately for you.
I got so excited because all the Bills fans start chirping during the game. You're going to do it. You're going to do it. And like after 3 years of doing this, I thought I would have stuck the landing on one. But I think I overestimated the New York Jets as much as they were losing, and maybe underestimated the defense. I'll tell you this. I wasn't calling in today, guys, if they lost this game to the Jets. I don't want to do that show. I refuse to do that show. I try to be a positive person. So I can't call in. I call after the Jags. That's fine. I'll give you one.
Okay.
But we're going to have to end our relationship if they lost to the Jets. And thank God they won by 300 points.
Yeah, but it's still, if they lost to the Jets wouldn't look as bad as they looked last weekend. I mean, they were.
I know.
It was bad. And. Yeah, the Bills got back on track, no question. The offense played good. The defense played good. The special teams was nearly perfect. I mean, they cut down on some penalties. The penalties weren't as big a factor for them. I mean, they were hitting on all cylinders. We heard it coming through the week that Sean McDermott was putting his finger on the table saying, hey, we've got to be more physical. You could hear it throughout all the player interviews all through the week, and they got the message, I guess.
They did. And you know what I like, Steve? I like that. I like shooting down storylines for this Buffalo Bills teams, and maybe it's Knox against them. There is a thing that we talked about, and that these Jets teams play them tough. You know, they haven't gotten the win yet, but these Bills, these McDermott Allen Bills, don't blow out the Jets. They struggle. They have tough. No, they didn't struggle for one hot second. They eliminated that one. There's still a pile of storylines left for them to eliminate the rest of the season. Sure. But that one's out. And I have to tell you, I work every morning in Manhattan, and I see the Post and the Daily News, and the Bills just were cold-hearted bastards to this Mike White storyline in New York City. Everyone thought that this guy was going to be Broadway Mike, and they had a superstar, and it was this beautiful, in this most cynical city in the world, it was this beautiful, sweet story of the New York Jets found their Cinderella. And then that Cinderella turned into a pumpkin in the shape of four interceptions against this gorgeous Buffalo Bills secondary. I like that the Bills were jerks about the Mike White storyline because Jets fans were devastated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw the, what was it? I think it was the New York Post. Mike dropped was one of the tabloid headlines.
We were
actually pretty good. We were trying to come up. We were trying to predict what it would be, right?
In the third quarter, we were wondering what the headline in the New York Post was going to be. Whether it was going to be, I should have been the first pick of the draft.
Oh.
Whiteout, everything. And they
that's a snow term. But
the whiteout would have been good. It was a snow,
probably would have been lost on a lot of New Yorkers, though.
Yeah,
New Yorkers. Well, I remember the one going into the game, they had this big picture of MetLife Stadium, and it was White House. Like, he was a guy who started one game.
It's his house already.
That's the level of the hype. Jesus. I know, and it's over. It's done. Yeah. Like, the poor kid may never play again. I'm sorry. I hate it, but, like, too bad. This is the NFL. It's competitive, and you ran into a really good secondary.
Yeah, in some small way, Robert Saleh might be thanking the Bills for eliminating a quarterback controversy that he might have been involved in had they pulled off the win. But, Kyle, we talked about this last week. You picked, you took it and ran with it on your show after the Bills turned in four interceptions, two of which were done by two new players on the defense. They're up to nine different players with picks in nine games. And you and your crack research staff found the record, because we talked about it, and I had no idea who it was. It's the Atlanta Falcons?
Isn't that weird? All right, so here's the deal. Brownie and Steve and I, last week, if you weren't watching or listening, how dare you, we want the 2021 Bills to break the record for most players with an interception for a season. Now, I got the list in front of me, Brownie. Tell me if this one's right. So, but current Buffalo Bills with an interception this season: Poyer, Hyde, Wallace, Edmonds, Rousseau, Jaquan Johnson, Matakevich, and then joining the party this past weekend, Tre'Davious White got his first, and Teron Johnson. That makes nine Buffalo Bills with an interception. Now, the record, yes, you're right, Brownie. I looked it up. If you do, you might see some things from 1987, but that was the replacement player schedule. Never mind, throw that out. The 2010 Atlanta Falcons, who were one of these Mike Smith, young Matt Ryan teams that won a lot of games but ended up losing the playoffs, they hold the record. 13 Atlanta Falcons that year had interceptions, which is prolific. You're starting 11 people on defense and 13 had picks. So that means to tie the all-time record, it's four, but we want to break this thing. We need five more Buffalo Bills with interceptions. Can we start to assemble a crew, guys, of guys who aren't in the club yet, but that we want on a week-to-week basis to join it?
Well, Steve was talking about this. We were talking about this on the show yesterday, and Steve's like, well, the best way to get there is if you have like a backup in. He's like, but that means somebody's hurt. And he said, I don't know if I want to go down that road. I said, let's go down this road then. The Bills blow out a couple of opponents here down the stretch, some backups get in the game. That's how Jaquan Johnson and Matakevich got their picks against Houston. It was 40-0. They got in the game, and they got turnovers late.
Absolutely. It can be backups, or you can get that odd deflection to the defensive tackle interception. Right. If we're going to get to 14, it's going to have to be a little bit weird. We're going to have the D lineman, or like your point, like the backup nickelback. But I think this is doable. We got five more players to go. And Bills fans, please, as the games are going on and the interceptions happen, if somebody new joins the club, alert us, because we want to keep track. We want to make history this year. And I think they can do it. I really do.
Yeah, they do. They do rotate there. It's going to have to be D linemen. They're going to have to get in on the act, and because they do rotate through about eight of those guys, and only one of them has got a pick this year. So that's untapped territory. So maybe we'll make that happen. As we look ahead, though, and this game, this week coming up, we've been talking about this all offseason. The toughest and most tense game for the Buffalo Bills fans last year, and for me doing the games on radio, was the Indianapolis Colts playoff game. Phillip Rivers played quarterback, Frank Reich coming back into the building. They played an extremely good football game here in this building. Their offensive line is good. Their defensive line is physical. This is a team that's won five out of the last seven. They started 0-3, looked like, wow, get there. Then they found themselves. Yep. Now they're playing really good. This is a game that, I think this is really going to be a heck of a football game.
Well, Steve, you know, Frank does not embark upon any endeavor unless he starts 0-3. That's just how he lives life. That's how he does it. So he likes to be from behind, and he's the best. So that's where he has you where he wants you. Sometimes I like to come in and you guys or the fan base a little bit reticent about the matchup, and I'll say, no, the Bills are going to win by 30. I ain't saying that this week. This is a scary one. This running game is for real. And you can pull up the playoff game last year, which was dicey, and Jonathan Taylor was really contained. You know, he got a bunch of carries, never broke the big run. This is a different deal right now. If you watch him every week, and especially since I do Angry Runs, Jonathan Taylor shows up all the time. I constantly have my eye on him. Like, he is awesome, explosive runner who looks nothing like a rookie. The O-line looks way better than it does last year, I think, in the running game. This is a problem. But you know what? Like, this Bills team's going to have to answer some questions. They're going to have some dates with destiny. You can't just skate. It can't always be the Jets. It can't always be what the Jags should have been. Like, sorry, you had a few weeks off of not a high-profile opponent. You handled it well sometimes, others not. This is the one. This guy's got a big right hand, and you got to box him. So do you have the jaw? Do you know how to slip it? Like, I'm actually excited about this game more so than the Jets game because I didn't learn much against the Jets. I want to see what the Bills have because those storylines we mentioned, that pile of storylines, one, do the Bills have a running game? I don't know. And two, can the Bills stop someone who does? I don't know. We're going to find out this weekend.
Yeah, and that's the thing that is really the question mark for Buffalo. Have you learned since the Tennessee game how to match up physically, particularly on defense in this one, and mash at the line of scrimmage? Do you have the intestinal fortitude to pay a price physically to win the battle at the line of scrimmage? And you look at the games that the Bills have lost this year. Pittsburgh, physical defensive front, foiled the offense. Tennessee, physical offensive front, foiled the defense. Jacksonville decided to play physical 2 weeks ago on defense, won the football game, and now you've got a physical offensive front coming in here again. You lose to this team, people are going to be asking, is this team even capable of playing physical when they absolutely have to?
I know. And listen, we're going to learn that, and then we're going to see what's going on with Josh and Wentz. Now, here's the way I look at this. Josh, I think, is significantly more talented than Wentz and has played football at higher levels. But there's some tendencies. There's some similarities between these two. These are big, strong guys who can run a little, who got big arms, and who sometimes get a little overexcited. Now, Josh has evolved past that more than Carson Wentz has, and he has a younger career. But listen, if this running game gets going, or if it doesn't, I'm talking about the Colts game, Carson Wentz will throw you one. So we're talking all these interceptions that the Bills secondary are going to get, and can they make a run at the all-time? This is a really good matchup for that. I love a 3rd-and-8 against the Colts this week. Wentz, sometimes he's nails, and sometimes I don't recognize him out there. I really, really don't. So this is a big opportunity, not only for the run defense, but again, for the secondary to say, we're the best in the league. I saw last week, I was watching the NFL Today on CBS. and Bill Cowher does his list of top five defenses. He's got the Bills number one, and this is before the game. Number one, he had them coming off the Jags game. Granted, they let up 9 points, but he still had them as number one. Let's prove the number one defense is in Buffalo. You can beat Carson Wentz. This is not exactly, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Joe Montana coming in here. You can be had.
Yeah, I know a lot of fans love to do this, and everybody plays offensive coordinator, right? Nobody plays defensive coordinator. They play offensive. They want to call plays, right? So we all think, all right, so if you're Brian Daboll and you're looking at this Colts thing, okay, I get it. But really, the pieces that fit together for the Colts are if the Bills play this nickel defense –
mm-hmm.
5 DBs on the field.
All the time.
Which means you got Taron Johnson on the field, who's a small guy. And Leslie Frazier has said, listen, we play our defense that way because our guy, Taron, gives us the ability to stop the run because he's a tough guy. He can make tackles and he can cover. I think if you want to take this out of the hands of Jonathan Taylor, you almost take Taron Johnson off the field. You throw A.J. Klein and Tremaine Edmonds on the field. You go three linebackers, go heavy, and say, okay, Carson, let's see you air it out all over the field and beat us with our secondary. So
I'm into that, too.
Yeah, that's Steve's game plan. It's fun to think about. That's my game plan. See if Carson can beat you.
I like that you play defensive coordinator. It's like the guy who only wants to play with the defense in the Tecmo Bowl. It's very rare, Steve, but that's your unique perspective. And I like it because, again, if you look at the playoff game, so Phillip Rivers is out. He threw 46 passes in that game. They passed a lot. You know, Taylor had a few carries. I mean, I think he had 20 carries or something like that. It wasn't like this crazy overload. But I think Phillip Rivers in a playoff game, I'm much more scared of him than I am of Carson Wentz right now. I absolutely, you're right. You're like, stuff Taylor as much as you possibly can. And then, my God, if Carson Wentz just rears back and beats you for four quarters, then maybe they're a better team. But I'd much rather take my chances with him.
Looking at, the latest goings on in the AFC, Kyle, obviously New England is gaining momentum, winners of four straight. I mean, I think it's getting a little over the top here when you see people at like the 33rd team writing, the dynasty has been reborn in New England. Right. I'm like, okay, hold
Does
on.
Does it just
second
make
here.
You sick, Brownie? Can Are you throwing up?
Oh, I'm in my mouth several times already. I wanna pump the brakes on that. I've got respect for their defense and what they've done. I think Matthew Judon might be the best free agent acquisition of the entire offseason in terms of fit for scheme. He is excellent in that system. That doesn't surprise me. You know, Belichick can identify that kind of talent. Can't draft or find a wide receiver, but that's another story.
No.
But it's the offense and the way it has come around. I still don't think their talent matches up with that of the Bills offensively, but the efficiency is there now. And if they can play efficient offense, score 23 points, and their defense can hold you to 17 and take advantage of your mistakes, that's how they're winning football games.
I know. And they are winning a lot of games. And look, the everybody kind of openly rooting for it or jumping to conclusions about the Patriots, it's because it's fun. They're a great character. And you may dislike them as a team, as an organization. When you're watching, the Friday the 13th movie, like, you want Jason to get up. He gets up and it's more exciting. He keeps chasing the person. This is the kind of Undertaker gif where he sits up in the middle of the ring. They are an amazing dark character in this league. And to have them back, quote unquote, is exciting. And I don't know, Brownie, you tell me, level with me. Are you telling me that in your mind, or never mind you, just amongst the mafia, that there is just not a little bit of concern, like, oh, crap, they're not these guys again. There has to be.
Kyle, the scar tissue, here is extremely deep. I mean, that was for about, 20 years? Almost 20 years, it was the who's your daddy game, and we weren't the daddy.
Yeah, there's a whole generation of therapy in the relationship.
Therapists made a killing in this area for over a decade with what happened. So, yeah, as soon as there's the littlest sign of that.
Monday, December 6th.
Yeah.
All right? Patriots. It's national. It's the whole deal. It's Christmas season. Steve's starting to tell people it might be cold. All right, and it might be. Let me tell you, those same therapists, those people who have now had to sell their vacation homes and they don't have their boats anymore because Brady left and Josh Allen showed up on Tuesday, December 7th of all days, will they be getting phone calls? Or maybe it's the day before the game. I just think there's something here where you do not want Bill Belichick to get on a winning streak. I don't care who his quarterback is. I'm getting nervous just a little bit talking. I'm not even in Buffalo.
Think about this. They've won 5 of their last 6.
Yeah.
The one loss inside those 6 is to the Dallas Cowboys in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And the loss, the 7th loss before that was to the Tennessee Titans or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady's return, they lost by 2 points. So they've lost an overtime game and
a game
to the world championships by 2
oh,
points.
No,
in their
Steve,
last,
they're back!
In their last 7 games. Yeah, they're
Steve,
they're
called, I will give Steve credit. He called it at the beginning of the year. He said, it's not the Dolphins you have to worry about in this division. It is still the Patriots. He said that in August, and he's right. And the thing that bothered me the most, Kyle, was the way the schedule lined up, because I wanted to get a crack at the Patriots in September when they usually have hiccups. They haven't put it all together. Mm-hmm. Both games are at the end of the season when you know the Patriots traditionally are playing better football after Thanksgiving, and that's exactly when the Bills got to play them, twice in a month.
Wow. See, now I'm riveted, and I'm doing like the nerdy fanboy thing, and I'm pulling up to the Patriots schedule, and they got all right. So the Falcons this week. Okay, well, who knows? That's Thursday night. That's in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then they got Tennessee, then they go to Buffalo, then a bye, Colts, Buffalo. So Titans, Bills, Colts, Buffalo, 4 in a row. That's tough.
Yeah.
If they come out of that, I would take 2-2 out of it. If they come out of that 3-1, we got real problems. And if they come out of a 4-0, it's the end of the world.
I kind of agree. Yeah, it's a mushroom cloud. The I've
predicting
always
Armageddon in November.
And here's the thing: last year they swept them, and the last time the Bills played the Patriots in Foxborough, they beat them 38-9. It was when Bill Belichick walked across the field, he looked at Sean McDermott in a way I haven't seen him look at other head coaches in a long time. I think McDermott and this coaching staff found a formula for going in there and handling their guys the right way and staying out ahead of the decision. You know, the Patriots are nothing if they're not on top of it as a coaching staff. They adjust on the fly. They get their guys. They put them in the right positions, all that. And for the first time ever since Belichick's been there, the Bills coaching staff was ahead of them at every turn during that game. It's the Bill Belichick slamming the phone down game. It was like everything.
So delicious.
It was just, it was great. The one I said was like chocolate pudding. It was like we were rubbing it on our face. It was so good. Yeah, so I think Belichick, and sometimes he's had a meeting with his staff in the offseason saying, listen, we're not doing that again. Make sure that doesn't happen to Buffalo again. So I think this is a game, I'm sure the Bills have it circled, and I think maybe this one to be maybe one of the few teams that Bill Belichick has circled on his calendar.
Gosh, you know, here's how I know the Patriots are still there in that scar tissue. We completely just got off of talking about the Colts. Never mind them. This game is 3 weeks from now, and here we all getting goosebumps talking about the Patriots with a rookie quarterback. That's how they're still there.
Kyle, we would be.
He's going to be rookie of the year. He is going to be
he's ahead of the pack right now.
Really good.
There's no question about it. He's completed 80% of his passes last week in a week.
He looked great against Cleveland.
He looked
great.
Like, and you got to tip your hat to them. They're handling him. I mean, people should document and put a pamphlet out as to how to handle a rookie quarterback because
Do they still have pamphlets?
I don't want to read a book. Just
where
give
do
me
we
a pamphlet.
Get
can I get a leaflet?
Give me a pamphlet, not a book. Give me the Reader's Digest version of how they handle it, because they've done a masterful job.
In an effort to change the subject here, Kyle, we would be remiss if we did not mention something that seems to happen at least once a season. I remember you joking last year about how you thought the Eagles might win the NFC East because of their tie that they had last year. I'm on the air yesterday going, hey, at least Detroit won't finish 0-16-1. And then me not being able to do the new math, I got people tweeting at me going, Brownie, there's 17 games. They could still go 0-16-1. I'm like, son of a gun! But anyway, you got to explain to me, Kyle, this day and age, with information at your fingertips on your phone, how do 20-somethings who can't be physically removed from that know that you can't have a tie in an NFL football game? Najee Harris is the latest example of this. He's putting his helmet on, getting ready for the 6th quarter. How do they not know this?
Well, don't you feel like, Brownie, that every single year almost when the first tie happens, there's always some story that happens where some player comes out and admits that he didn't know that there were ties. Like, obviously, the massive one was McNabb years ago. Donovan McNabb was in a tie and came out and said, I didn't know there were ties. And he got crushed for it because he's a quarterback and he was a veteran at the time. But it seems to chase that a lot. I would think, like, all right, so if you're an older guy, if you're, you know, a player who's been around for years and years, you didn't grow up watching the NFL with ties or with, you know, because they would just wouldn't happen as much as this. But now it's like the overtime rules have changed. And someone like Najee Harris has grown up watching the new overtime rules. He's heard about them. I don't understand how it happens at all, or that someone on the sideline doesn't tip him off or maybe tell him he's not supposed to say that. I'm with you in this, but then I'm sort of speechless about it.
Yeah. Well, it was the best because he's explaining it and he's like, yeah, the guy next to me said, no, it's over, bro. It's over.
He was
completely dumbfounded. How about this kick from 48? Steve and I were saying for the Lions, this 48-yard field goal attempt, Steve or I could do better at our current age. It looked like they pulled somebody out of the stands that won a contest. What the hell was that?
That was like that old Andy Reid punt, pass, and kick picture. Like there was just some guy in section 354 named Mitch. And then Mitch, give it a shot. It was really, really bad.
Yeah, the line.
I do like the theater, though.
Yeah,
I
enjoy the
theater of the tie. Like, I like, no one knows how to act, especially if it's a winless team. It's like the Lions. Like, there is that, like, we didn't lose. I think it's good, but no one wants to celebrate because they didn't win.
Yeah,
I like that purgatory.
We were wondering if Coach Campbell gets anything in the locker room after a tie because he hasn't gotten his first win to, you know, to get the ceremonial game ball after the game.
Yeah.
What does he get for a tie? Like a pack of crackers or something? I don't know what you get for that.
And what is the speech even? Like, do you say, like, great day, guys? Or like, it's not like you can say this was unfortunate or you can't say this is great. I don't even know how to talk about it. Imagine you have to be in the – Steve, you ever have any ties?
No, but I said my post-game speech would be to the Lions would be like, hey, guys, baby steps, you know. Just baby steps.
Oh, man.
you know, you don't have to do it all
first
at once.
First we crawl, then we walk.
So, but then the great line about that winning kick that fell short is it was like a 48-yard field goal that would have been good from 28. You know, instead of a 45, instead of a 45-yard field goal, it would have been good from 60. It was a 48-yarder that would have been good from 28.
Guys, great effort. Let's just try to get closer for Mitch over there.
The thing is, like, baby steps, just tiny progressions. We're better this week than we were last week. We haven't gotten a win, but there we go.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. Hopefully,
well, this year it's Lions Browns this week, so it's the two teams that have the winless seasons against each other. I hope that Detroit wins, but more importantly, do you guys know that the Bills play the Patriots in a few weeks? Did we cover that?
Yes, I think we did, and we'll probably cover it again with you in the future, I'm sure.
Browns, Lions, throw the record books out.
Yeah.
There we go.
That's Kyle, right.
Thanks as always for the time. We'll catch up with you next week. Hopefully we're talking about another Bills victory.
See you later, my friends. Oh, let me give you a score.
Do that.
What are they playing this week? The Colts. I'm going to give it 31-20 Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
31-20.
Sounds good,
right,
Kyle. We hope it happens. Thank
you.
That's
you
Kyle Brandt from Good Morning Football. Makes his appearance here every Tuesday. And, we did get off on a tangent there. That got a little out of control. Apparently, we're ready to talk about the Patriots. I mean, we'll be talking about the Colts the rest of the week. But they got some momentum now. And quarterback, kid looks like the real deal. He's throwing – you watch him throw some of those short to intermediate routes, and it's like, oh, my God, it's like Brady all over again. You know, sitting him in those little areas, finding those little short passes, back at, you know, top of the drop, bang, it's out. Top of the drop, bang, it's out. It's just like, oh, geez, we have to live through that again? I really don't want to.
Yeah, they seem to be in the perfect play every play.
Beat themselves.
Yeah, turn it over.
I mean, Belichick and his staff realized pretty quickly, early in his tenure there in New England, a lot of these teams screw up in the course of a given week. If we just play sound football and have smart players that 98% of the time make good decisions, we're going to win 80% of our games because the other team's bound to screw up.
Yeah, and those close and tight games, that's all the edge you need is an extra 5-yard penalty at the wrong time that they get and you don't. And we've seen that. I think they went to the Super Bowl because some jamoke lined up offsides.
Yeah.
That's it. That was the reason they beat the Chiefs in the championship
Who
game.
Was it, Frank Clark?
Yeah. They've lined up. I mean, that's the kind of thing you just don't do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Break time for us here when Steve and I come back. We'll take a look at the tweet sheet. Haven't done that yet. As we were asking you today, inside the building here at One Bills Drive, what's the biggest challenge for the Bills for the remainder of the season? We'll get to those when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Buffalo Bills and AdPro Sports are partnering to recognize some of the best coaches that Western New York has to offer through the 2021 High School Football Coach of the Week program. This week for Section 6, it's Medina's Eric Valley. Week 11 Coach of the Week in Section 6 after his undefeated Mustangs won 58-6 against Fredonia in the Section 6 Class C final. Medina, New York's number one team in Class C, was able to earn its second straight sectional title, advancing to the Far West Regional. Valley has been head coach at Medina for 14 seasons. In Section 5, it's Canandaigua Academy's Jeff Welsh. He takes home this week's honor after his team's 16-14 nail-biter over University Prep in the Section 5 Class A final. Canandaigua, also undefeated, claimed its third consecutive sectional championship to set up a Far West regional matchup with Section 6's Jamestown on Friday. Welsh in his 11th season as head coach at Canandaigua. Congrats to those coaches and their teams. We have to discuss with you our Twitter conversation. Inside the building here at One Bills Drive, what is the biggest challenge for the Bills for the remainder of the season? Jack, well, I would be remiss if I didn't say tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. Jack says the challenge has to be maintaining focus. They cannot worry about talking heads, the media, or other teams. Take it one game at a time. Focus on winning on that Sunday. They have one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. Let the rest of the league worry about the Buffalo Bills.
It's true. I kind of agree with that, a lot of what they say. The stuff that the biggest challenge is not the stuff you can't control. The challenge is taking care of and staying on point with all the things you can control. And, you know, the bad stuff, you know, sometimes you're not meant to overcome it anyway. You gotta, you know, take your lumps. But it's unpredictable. It has nothing to do with whether you're doing your job well or not.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose the wrong guy to injury, if, you know, all of that. What they can control is their own focus and their own preparation and their mindset. Their talent is inherent. So I agree with that. You got to play well on game day, whether you practice well, whether you feel good, whether you're dragging around a hurt or an ailment. You got to play well on game day. If they can do that, they're going to be fine.
JT says making sure we stay disciplined and keep stacking wins. It would be great to have a first week bye and home field advantage. Also staying healthy and run well when we do run. O-line must stay stout for the remainder of the season and into the playoffs. Don't take any opponents lightly. That's pretty obvious, I would say. Thomas says, with an early bye, the biggest challenge will be staying healthy, making sure that key players on both sides of the ball remain upright, especially with 7 weeks remaining. This also includes keeping COVID isolated and controlled. Long-term injuries could sink us. I got to put, and you just said, you know, control the things you can control. To a certain extent, you can't control COVID. It kind of runs the show.
Right.
But there are measures you can take to reduce its effectiveness in spreading throughout your roster. And it's cropped up the last 3 or 4 weeks for a number of teams around the league. I mean, Roethlisberger misses that game last week.
Yep.
And they tie an 0-8 team as a result.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, Pittsburgh's in a race. And they tie a football game to a winless football team at home because he can't play.
Ben's a polarizing guy because of some of the things that happened early in his career off the field. And he has, you know, he can throw it. The guy's always been a really good thrower of the football. He's not a good athlete. He doesn't roll out. He doesn't move around as much as he did, but the guy can sling it. And he alone is the biggest reason they're in the race.
Yeah. And if you watch the other quarterback last Sunday,
Mason
you know
Rudolph
why.
Can't play. And the Steelers need a quarterback to play and to go. And Big Ben's their only hope.
Aaron Rodgers missed a game because of COVID.
They lost.
They lost the game. I have to tell you, that is the biggest fear that I have the rest of the way here with this football team. That somebody sue. I mean, Star was important. Fortunately, they were playing the Jets. But Star misses this game this week, which is still a possibility. I'm a little uneasy. And so you already have the injury risk. That's built in just by the nature of the game that this team plays, along with the other 31 teams. But then you throw COVID on top of that, knowing it can compromise the depth of your roster, the talent of your roster, the playmaking ability of your roster. That sends shudders through me, man. I don't like that at all. And that's got to drive NFL coaches absolutely nuts. You got enough variables you got to worry about. Now you got to throw in a pandemic virus, which is completely unpredictable. It could crop up on game day. It could crop up the day you're getting on a plane. I mean, that's what happened last year. You had three players you had to pull off the plane.
Yeah.
Before you flew to, what was it, Arizona, I think.
I think it was Arizona. Or maybe it was the San Francisco game in Arizona.
They lost like two corners and a safety. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what worries me the most.
The stuff that you cannot control is a big worry, but it's nothing you can do about it anyway. So you can't even treat it as a challenge. That's
all right.
So, yeah.
So you're okay. So it doesn't qualify is what you're saying.
Right.
All right. Joshua says coaching adjustments made to game plans after the game starts. Offense has held on too long at times to passing versus rushing when things haven't gone our way. 6 points allowed in the first quarter all season is great. Just need to finish the game with the same intensity. I think they've done pretty good at closing out games for the most part. Just didn't go their way at the end of the Tennessee game. Maybe he's talking about running at the end of the game to kind of shorten it and salt it away. Maybe that's what he's getting at. I don't know. I think the coaching adjustments, for the most part, have been pretty sound. I know people were all up in Coach Daboll's kitchen after the Jacksonville game, but there was just as much an execution issue as anything in that game, as far as I was concerned. They got whipped at the line of scrimmage. And if you get beat up front, you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You can have the best play calls in the universe. You can't win at the line of scrimmage. You're not going to be executing much of anything.
We've seen that time and time again here in Buffalo, and they've made it a priority. And like I said, the injuries that you can't foresee have really – that kind of derailed them in the Jacksonville game, in my opinion. They would have been able to be more effective offensively, and all you're talking about is one play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the injuries were the derailing factor in that in the Jacksonville game, which is the only blemish on their record since Tennessee.
Very quickly, I wanted to run us through a little NFL true-false because there is a Colts tie-in – which is Buffalo's next opponent for NFL True False, which is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. And NFL True False number one, Steve, Jonathan Taylor will claim the NFL rushing title this season. True or false? You know Derrick Henry is out of the equation with that season-ending injury.
I think it's true. I think he's going to do it. I think he's in this position right now that – Cleveland's kind of stumbling to the finish line here. I think the Colts are going to play consistent and consistently well all the way through the season, and Jonathan Taylor's going to get his opportunities. I think he's the guy. Certainly Derrick Henry was the only choice a month ago, but he's not going to finish the season. So I think Jonathan Taylor is the odds-on favorite for the rushing title. And I don't think Zeke Elliott in Dallas, as good as their offense is, I don't think they rely on him the way they once did. You're looking around the league. Eckler, no. McCaffrey's hasn't played enough. You know, just name another running back. Saquon Barkley isn't playing. So, yeah, I don't think Cordarrelle Patterson. I just don't see anybody else being able to keep up with him over the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, he's been pretty resilient, right? So the crazy thing is this. Derrick Henry's missed, what, 2 weeks? What has he been out? 2 weeks now?
I think maybe three games.
He's now tied with Jonathan Taylor for the rushing lead in the league at 937 yards. Chubb is more than 200 rushing yards behind him because he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Plus, he shares the workload, and I believe Kareem Hunt's coming off IR in a week or two. So his carries will get eaten into.
Yeah, but Jonathan Taylor, And, you know, last week he was number three, but he's only got a, you know, Derrick Henry's still got 219 attempts. He still leads the league by a long way in attempts. Jonathan Taylor's got 161. Derrick Henry's got 219 carries.
The difference is Jonathan Taylor's averaging a yard and a half more than him.
Yeah, 5.82 to 4.28. Both those guys, let's face it, both those guys are.
But I would say true on this. I think Jonathan Taylor is certainly the odds-on favorite to nail this thing down. So I would say true as well. All right, NFL true-false number two, Steve. NFL's taunting rule must be eased. True or false?
I will say eased, false. I would say just get it right. I don't, you know, I don't care. I mean, I don't like taunting any better than anybody else. And I'm not as adverse to it as anybody. I mean, I'm just kind of an average guy. Sometimes it's okay. Sometimes I get it. But if you're going to call it, just call it consistently. I don't care what the rule is. Just make it so we all, when we see it, we all go, yeah, that's taunting. So I can call it with the official. Put me on the same team as the official. I'm saying when people are watching the game and they see something, they go, yeah, they got to call that. Boom, call it. Right? Or when they go back and look at the replay, and they go, yeah, you know what? He's right. That was a penalty. That's all I want. That's all I want.
Right.
Because I know the rule.
Yeah. And the problem is when you institute it for the first time, there isn't
much. It's all over the board.
There isn't much to go off of. The parameters aren't concrete and readily recognizable. So, yeah. Should it be eased? No. I think when you're first instituting a rule, you have to be strict and forceful with it, even if sometimes you go over the line in what it's about. Because if you, it's like a parent, Steve.
Yeah.
When your kid gets out of line, you overpunish to eliminate any thought in their mind. Steve.
You're killing mosquitoes with sledgehammers,
I'm
huh?
telling you right now. You overpunish.
Bud,
so
nip
there
it.
Isn't even a nip second it. Thought by
nip
your
it
kid.
In the bud.
That they're going to do that again.
Nip it in the bud.
You overpunish. And so I think here with the taunting, you want it to be readily recognized by everybody in the league. You overpunish in year one and set the standard. And it'll be a lot easier to officiate in the years to follow. As
I saw Barney Fife and old Andy Griffith said, all the experts will tell you they're for bud nipping. Bud nipping. Nip it in the bud.
Did we just have a Mayberry reference?
I think
the
we
Andy
did.
Griffith show.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. No, just get it right. Just when you see it.
So I say false too.
Yeah, when it's disrespectful or when it's at your opponent, it's a penalty. When it's not, it's not. So there you go. I just say I don't care what the rule is. Just get it right and get it the same.
All right, that's NFL's True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Break time for us. Steve and I close it up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Inside the Numbers is brought to you by the New York Lottery. Go to buffalobills.com/prizepacksack to win a $100 in New York Lottery scratch-offs and a signed football. It's a pretty good deal. The Bills have five different defensive backs, White, Poyer, Hyde, Wallace, and Johnson. Tally a takeaway against the Jets, marking the first time since at least 1967. That five Bills defensive backs have done that in one game.
At least 1967, because they can't find one ever. But they can't go back.
Well, they found one. Oh, no. They can't go back further than that.
Yeah, they can't go back further than that for some reason.
Very interesting.
I'll go on record. It is my belief that it has never happened.
It's pretty rare.
Pretty rare.
I do remember a Bills-Jets game. It was the Mark Sanchez five turnover game. He had five turnovers. And I think the Bills got a sixth takeaway when John Wendling, I don't know, he had an interception late in the game, was the fifth one. And the Bills needed overtime to win 13-10, I think, was the final
six
score
over, with, six
with five takeaways.
Wow.
But I don't think it
those
was
were
all
the
members
days,
of the
folks,
secondary.
Right there. Those were the days.
We're done for today. Bills back on the practice field tomorrow. Steve and I will be covering it in full and getting ready for those Indianapolis Colts who've got some interesting numbers. We'll see you tomorrow.